Session number 27052.
Mr. Franklin, Reel 7. Now, let's look at, I think we don't do this quite so much detail, but what about the operations with, off Palestine? Can you explain the background to what was going on?
Well, what was going on was that they were trying to stop the Jewish immigrants coming in illegally, I should imagine, or illegal immigrants into Palestine. And they were sending out boarding parties to intercept these boats, which were in terrible conditions. They were swilling with sewage. They were very old boats. I remember seeing one, and I thought we were back in the days of Captain Cook. They were...
Describe it for us.
Well, they were like these... like the old ships used to be, with the raised back and back on them, you know, very old. Like the old, you know, raised back and the raised front and the dip in the middle, like the old, what's it called, boats? The old warships used to be, you know. I couldn't believe to see these, but they used to,
Did you go aboard one?
No, I wasn't. I did go and have a look round one that had been brought in. And, well, I say look around it. I didn't stay very long because it smelt pretty strongly. But that was unofficial.
Now, do you remember anything of this time? I mean, what you were actually doing?
Well, I was... we only went in there for 2 days. We were only in Haifa for 2 days. And there was a fear of having limpet bombs put on the ship to blow up, you know, if there was a guerrilla action going on. So I did patrol the decks for 2 days. I was there. No, first day I was there, rather. I was on deck patrol.
And what did you do on deck patrol? How could you stop a limpet bomb?
Well, you walked around and you were told if you saw anyone swimming towards the ship to warn them off, or if they didn't stop, you fired at them. So if anyone came, you saw anyone swimming towards you in the water, swimming towards the ship, could be carrying a bomb or something, because they could stick limpet bombs on the hull and blow them up, couldn't they? So you were just told to keep an eye and see that no one went into come swimming towards the ship. Anyone coming towards the ship, you had to challenge them. If they didn't take any notice, then fire them.
Did you see anybody?
There were some people swimming, and you could be in, get a problem. If you fired your gun, you were on a charge for used ammunition without being given the order to fire. But you were also told that if someone approached, you were to stop them. So you were in, you know, between the devil and the deep blue sea with the orders in that case.
So what did you do?
Well, they were just swimming about. There were youngsters and that swimming about all the time, but no one came actually towards the ship to do any damage, so
there
was
fire.
No problem. In the morning, there used to be people come down and wash in the sea there, you know. I remember walking on the deck one day, and there was some dear old lady there, completely naked, having a bath in the water, you know.
This is off Haifa?
This is in Haifa Harbour. Actually in the harbour itself, alongside.
Anything else happen?
Well, we were out ashore, and I went ashore. And
tell us about that. What was it like in Haifa?
Well, we went down. We found that the Arab quarter was very downtrodden, but the Jewish quarters were absolutely immaculate. The houses were beautiful, and gardens and all that sort of thing. But the Arab quarter, it was very down and very austere, you know.
Did you take sides at all yourself between the two communities, Arab and Jewish, or were you not interested?
No, we just, probably myself being quite young, I was just there as a part of the Navy to not taking the job as serious perhaps as one should have done, but we were just there taking orders, doing as we were told, and... all I did was went ashore, had a walk round, found a bar and had a, I think I had a drink of lime juice or something.
Did you have to be careful? I mean, were there attacks made on people ashore at all, or were you warned about that people might attack you?
No, we were quiet. Walked around. We were told to. There were certain places which were out of bounds in all harbours. They were normally marked with a cross and a ring round it, and you didn't go in those places if they had that on them. They were out of bounds. So that was a warning. They were put there to warn you not to go there. But we walked at a quiet at liberty through the streets, and we didn't get any problems at all, you know. There was always a certain amount of... I don't know what you call it, prejudice, racism, or what it was amongst naval personnel, because if they weren't English, they were something else, you know. We all were, and that was it. But
anything else happened while you were at Haifa or off Haifa? Because you were only on the Orion a couple of months, weren't you? From
I was only on there 2 months.
May till June.
Yes, I went to Haifa, and then we went up to. From Haifa, we left Haifa after 2 days, and we went up to Crete, Cyprus and Crete. We were allowed ashore in both those places.
Anything, do you remember anything about it?
Yes, I thought Cyprus we found quite nice. I did actually meet up with, or saw this chap they called, in Cyprus, Bakarius, was he? I thought he was a very old man because he had this very big black beard. Being a youngster from England, I thought he was a... But he wasn't. He appeared when I was out there. He was only about 36, but he had this big black beard and this peculiar hat. So they wore, you know, stovepipe hats, I think they wore. I did come across him once. I think I was in Limassol at that time. Was it Limassol?
What were you doing in Cyprus?
Nothing in particular. I think just showing the flag.
Was that what you were doing in Crete as well?
Yes, that's all. Just showing the flag. We used to go ashore, and the ship used to stand off. We used to go ashore and just have a run ashore and go into the bars and wander around, have a look around at what was going on, or go and have a coffee. I remember I saw my first banana tree in... Cyprus. We went to Kyrenia, I believe it was, and we went into a little cafe there to have a coffee, and in the garden was this banana tree, and that was the first one I'd ever seen in my life, a banana tree, right, which was something I remember writing home about it and telling them.
Anything about Crete?
Crete was quite nice. Let me see, that was, where did we go in Crete? Is it Limassol, Crete, or...? I get muddled with the towns of Crete and Cyprus, the two islands, actually, because when we went into Souda Bay in Crete, and the thing that struck me more than anything was the military cemetery there, the masses of crosses, rows and rows and rows of crosses in the military cemetery. It was... You never realised how many people had been... hurt, you know, because they had to evacuate it, didn't they? Actually, the Orion was involved in the evacuation of Crete in 1941, and they suffered quite heavy losses and a lot of damage, actually, at that time. And that was a call back out of a bravado to show that we're still here, we survived, you know. But we did call back.
Now, how did you come? You must have left shortly after that.
Then we went down back to Malta after cruising around and doing that kind of Mediterranean cruise. And then we went back to Malta. And I believe she was coming back to England after that, the Orion. And I was then drafted off of that to LST 3027, tank landing ship.
Landing ship tank, yeah, LST
3027. She was renamed.
That's not quite the same sort of ship, is it?
No, that's
very different.
Oh, that was completely different to the ordinary, to the ships I had been on during the rest of the time. And we were doing
And this is June 46. And you were going to be on her, right, until May 47?
Till I was left, yeah, till
but
I
she was known as the Lofoten.
Now, yeah, she was renamed in 1947 as Lofoten.
Now, what were you doing? Were you a quartermaster aboard her?
Yes, I was quartermaster aboard her.
Now, tell us, just give us an idea what your duties were on that ship.
Well, my duties all the time was as quartermaster and looking after the wheelhouse, keeping it clean, and I in charge of the bosun's mates, which we had. Quartermaster's had a bosun's mate with him when he went on watch to give him relief from the wheel, because you couldn't stand there 4 hours continuous. You would change over and have a rest, and they'd take over the wheel, and you'd keep an eye on them. We were doing runs, several runs.
What were you doing? You were in the Mediterranean, weren't you?
Yeah, but then we went up the Adriatic to Trieste, and we'd had lots of runs to Trieste. And what we were doing, we were dumping obsolete or excess Italian and shells and shells and guns, revolvers and rifle ammunition and revolver ammunition. We had some German prisoner of war on board. And we went out into the Mediterranean and dumped it. And we took tons and tons of that out from Trieste, loaded up with that. They used to be brought on the dories, unloaded, and we had...
What else were you doing?
We also evacuated the police from Pola in Yugoslavia.
Tell us about that.
We took all the police and the families of the police from Pola in Yugoslavia up to Trieste, and they disembarked there.
But why? What happened?
Well, it was being handed over to Yugoslavia. I think it had been part of Italy at one time, and it had been some sort of agreement that it was being handed over. And we took the...
Was there any problem or trouble about it?
No. When we were in Trieste, there used to be... at night, you used to see these fires on the hills where there was this demonstration, and they used to light bonfires out in the hills beyond Trieste, because it was all part of this Balkans problem that was going on out there. But we did sometimes, in Trieste, they had a protest, a crowd would come in, you know, and be chanting and what have you, and then it'd all disperse and clear off and quieten down after a while.
Ashore in Trieste then?
Pardon?
You got ashore in Trieste?
Oh, yes, we went ashore and we had quite a lot of... We spent quite a lot of time in Trieste, but right on the jetty, there was a dance hall and a canteen, like a naffy canteen, and a dance hall. And we spent most of our time ashore in there. We had a look around the town, of course, but used to buy some odd things. I believe I bought a case there, a fiberglass case, which I'd never seen fiberglass cases before. I bought a fiberglass case there, ready for when I was hoping one day to go home.
Anything else you were doing? Because you were with her for about a year.
Yeah. Well, we were doing this all the time, going around. I also went to Venice on her. And in Venice we were given... Each watch was given a week's leave, which we spent in Skien, in Cortina, where there was an arrangement. We arranged for us to spend a week each in Cortina. And...
What do you remember?
We were taught to ski and, it was a brilliant time. We had a brilliant time there. We had a lovely hotel called the Savoia in the main street of Cortina. I think it was just after the Olympics had been, 46 Olympics probably, had been held there. And we went on the skiing. We were taught, we had instructors and... I found that the hotels were out of this world, are beautifully furnished, and we had beautiful rooms. we were allocated twin rooms. There's two of us in a room each, and the food and everything else was out of this world. All the skis were paid for, and that, and our equipment. We were allocated army equipment and goggles and everything, and we were able to hire boots. I think we had to pay for our laundry, which was about something like three shillings, equivalent of 3 shillings, of course, in lira. I think lira was about 1 million lira to the pound then or something. It was very high. You needed a tachy case to carry a few pounds worth of lira.
Now, anything else? Any other jobs you were doing on the 3027?
I was a quartermaster on there all the time, and I did do gunnery drills on there and all that sort of thing.
What about the ship? Anything else the ship was doing?
You did gunnery drills. They checked your ability on the Oricans and what have you. I was allocated an Oricon on there in case it was needed. That was the first time that I'd ever seen a twin Oricon. We had twin Oricons on there.
And what do you think of the twin?
They were great because they were all hydraulic, worked by hydraulics, so you just pressed a foot pedal to swing it around. And they were also fitted with gyro sights, which was a new type of sight. It was like a screen with, when it switched on, you had two rings. One ring was your target, and the other ring was how fast it was going. It automatically gave you the aim off. So you followed the aircraft. You had to beam on the aircraft. And I'd been trained on these before, actually, so I was able to tell the gunnery officer how they worked, which probably why he gave me a good report on the ability.
So anything else before you... I mean, were you looking forward to being... What was your attitude to being demobbed? Were you looking forward to it? Or were you
I was looking
happy?
Forward to get away, to get home again and see the family.
So how did you get back in the end?
We came back on one of the castle boats, and I can't remember the name of it. But when the castle... Because they had several ships called castles.
And that'd be May 47, would it?
Yeah, in May 47.
And what about your demob? Tell us about that. Because you were demob, looks like, August.
Yeah, in August. Well, I went back to Portsmouth to Victory for probably no more than a day, and then they'd sent us out to what I think must have been a demob camp. And I went to a place called Stockey's Camp in Havant. And we were billeted in tin huts there in a forest. And I was made corporal of the guard there, so I was in charge of patrolling of the perimeter, and I just wandered around, done very little, except in the morning you had to go onto divisions to make sure that you were still there. A lot of them used to abscond anyway and dive out because there was no perimeter fence, just an ordinary hedge around this forest.
Now, how were you actually demobilised?
Then we went, we were still in Havant, and we went to a place in Havant, some big building, where they issued us with a demob suit, a pair of shoes, shirt, tie, and given a warrant to take you back home.
And, were the clothes any good? The demob suit?
Yes, I actually wore mine for quite some time. I had a double-breasted pinstripe grey suit. So I had. And
now, what were you going to do when you came out? I mean, did you have any idea what you were
doing? No idea whatsoever. So what I did, I went down to the local, and the farmer's son was in there. And
was there any question of you going back on the farm?
Well, it was, yeah, and I did go back for a while. But things had changed. My mind had changed. I was not going to be told by someone who I felt at that time. The guy who was in charge then, the father who was the boss of the farm, had more or less retired and put his sons in charge. And one of the sons was a right little so-and-so. And although I went back and drove the tractors and the combines and what have you, I did tractor driving most of the time.
So why do you think you were unhappy?
I couldn't get on with the sons, and they were always demanding this, demanding that. And in the back of my mind, I thought you'd been given... I know they were doing a great job feeding the country, but they'd been allowed off from joining the army and having to fight. And that to me, I thought, although I was mug enough to volunteer, perhaps, although I felt I'd never regretted joining the Navy, never would. I think it was the most wonderful time of my life.
Now, so what did you do? What were you going to do?
Well, I
How long did you stick it?
I stuck it for about 3 years, I think, to when I was 47.
To about 1950?
About 1950. And then I left and started looking around. Oh, I'd met the wife then. And we were talking about marriage and that sort of thing. And my mother-in-law said to me... you looking for another job? So I said, yes, I am. She said, well, there's a job going at the hospital if you're interested. So I said, well, I'll go and have a look at it, see if I'd do it, like it. And I went and took a job in the hospital.
What's that?
Highwood Hospital at Brentwood. And I went there, actually, I went there as a porter, took a job as a porter to get what is like a footing, they say, into the health service. And after a year, I was... decided to go, as they promoted me to a driver, so I was driving lorries for the health service then. And I did that for a few years. And then the manager of the portering services and telephone services came up, and I applied for the job and was given the job. And I did that for the next 30-odd years before, till I retired in 1991,
and how do you think your wartime career in the Navy and your service in the Navy had affected you? I mean, had it been bad for you?
No, good for me. Physical? No, it was good for me. It did everything. It made me change my life, which could have continued on humdrum, I suppose, not getting anywhere, not any, I mean... You can work on the farm for the rest of your life and never be anywhere or anything. You never do anything. No, there's no promotion or anything like that. Well, by joining the health service, I was able to be promoted to being in charge of 33 men.
And you put that down to your naval experience?
Yes, because that made me realise that you don't have to stick in one spot and carry on in a humdrum life. You can head higher. And this gave me... The crew, I mean, by I did apply at one time to there for the leading seaman's rate in the Navy, but they told me I would have to go back, come home to England, and then go back to Malta and sign on for another 3 years, and I wasn't prepared to do that, so I gave that idea up.
Now, that's physical, so it's mental, rather. So mentally it was good for you, but what about your hearing? Because...
Well,
was that because of the 16-inch gun?
Yeah, it was a blast. In actual fact... Soon after I got back to barracks, I realised I'd lost an eardrum, but I would not say anything for the simple reason I was afraid of being discharged. I didn't want to be. You get medically discharged. So it wasn't until after I was demobbed that I applied to go and have my ears checked because of that problem. I hadn't been able to hear in one ear since the Normandy landings. I'd been completely deaf in that ear.
Did they give you any treatment or any pension for it?
They gave me a pension, 20% pension for the loss of hearing, but I only got that about 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
So you didn't get that? You just
not
you had
beginning.
To apply very
well,
late?
Well, I did apply very late because I didn't think that, you know, as I hadn't done anything at the time it happened, that they wouldn't listen to me.
Had it been a serious... I mean, do you regret that having lost your hearing? I mean, did it make a big difference to you, do you think?
It,
or?
didn't at the time. I mean, I was able to take orders, listen. I always made sure that I was, if I went to a meeting and that, I was sitting so as my ear was, my right ear was at the right direction, so as it wouldn't be noticed in actual fact, during the, you know, during my time in the Navy.
Okay, so the last thing we want to ask is your membership of the Royal Naval Association and the Captain Class Association. You've taken, I don't know which you joined first. Tell us about them.
What, the Royal Naval Association?
That was first, was it?
Yes, I joined that. I was in the hospital and I was in the bank one day and I met this chap who was talking to him. He'd been in the Navy and he said to me, oh, he said, do you belong to the Naval Association? I said, no. He said, well, we've got quite a strong branch in Brentwood. He said, I'll introduce you, and which he did. So that's how I joined.
So what does it do? Why is it good? What does the Royal Naval Association mean?
Well, they
to
meet
you?
Every month and they chat and talk. I haven't... they chat and talk and you meet up with lots of old shipmates. I've never been fortunate enough to meet up with anyone I've served with, believe it or not, but of all the people from around Brentwood, none of them ever served in the same ships as I did, so...
But do you still value it, meeting old... Is it still important to you?
No, it's not... I can say it's important. It's nice to belong to, and there's something to do with the Navy that... if you still feel you belong...
Now, what about the Captain Class Association? That was from your connection with HMS Dean, of course, one of the ships.
Yes, that was...
Why did you join the Captain Class?
I saw it on... I saw it advertised on television, one on teletext. So I decided to get in touch with Harry Fine and joined it like from there, and then continued to go to the some of the reunions.
But why do you like that? Why do you do that? What is it?
Well, I feel it gives myself and the wife a couple of days out, you know. And
have you met any of your old shipmates through that, from the
deep? I did this last time. He was a seaman torpedoman aboard there, bloke named Conlon.
Did you recognise him?
I didn't recognise him. No, you don't. You do you recognise very few of the old shipmates. They've changed so much over the years. I mean, what, we were all youngsters, boys really, you know. And it's amazing that you just don't recognise them. The features have changed. All our features must have changed so much. We've aged, haven't we? I mean, most of us are in our 70s. I must be one of the youngest, because we were last volunteers around 40... Three were probably the last entries, more or less, you know, except for a couple of year. And then from then on, training took them past the war, didn't it?
Thank you very much.